All right, welcome everybody to Lecture 30 in this American History Program of History at Our House as we continue with our story of the Age of Discovery. Today we're going to see that Columbus's discovery unleashed a tidal wave of exploration. So that's going to be the title of today's class, the tidal wave of exploration. Columbus, when he discovered what he did in 1492, his voyage completely changed the world. It set the world on a path that brought about globalization, as we know, the connection and interconnection of all the people of the world, and a world of America-centrism, involving, of course, the rise of the United States of America, which could not have happened without the discovery of America. So, that's why in this class we refer to the event of 1492 as Christopher Columbus Discovers America. Now our task is to see what happened in the years after the discovery. The amazing amount of activity that was spurred by Columbus revealing the New World. It was a very exciting time to be alive, and for people who wanted to do something new, for people who wanted to break out of the old patterns of life and accomplish new things. This Age of Discovery was a time when there were a lot more opportunities to do things that people had not been doing for a long time in history. So, one of the things about the New World, well, there were a number of interesting things about the New World that were revealed by Columbus. One of them was there were a bunch of new products, new things that Europeans had never seen before. For instance, one thing that people in Europe didn't know about before Columbus did his discovery of America was sugar. There was no sugar in Europe up to that point. There was honey, there were different kinds of sweeteners, but sugar comes from a plant, right? It comes from sugar cane. And so that is definitely very commonly found in the islands of the Caribbean. And so that revealed a whole new source of sweeteners and cavities for Europeans. And and they also learned about tobacco, and so they found the native people of the Americas smoking. And we know nowadays that that's not healthy, but anyway, that came back to the Europeans as well. And so there were different things that were kind of interesting about America. So that was all fine. And there was also the possibility of gold. There's very little of it in the islands that Columbus had explored in his first voyage. But one of the reasons why, going back to our famous painting here of Columbus, is that that we were looking at last time, one of the reasons why John Vanderlyn, the artist who made this painting, shows these characters down here, scrambling around, competing to reach out to find something, is that what he's trying to show us is as an artist, is that they were obsessed, the European people were, with finding more gold. So back then, people used gold and silver directly as money. Nowadays, we have all kinds of things that we do differently. It's quite amazing what we do. We have paper kinds of money. We have electronic kinds of money with our credit cards and stuff like that, right? It's very strange the way that we act with regard to money compared to people in ancient times. That's a fascinating thing to study in and of itself. But back then, to have money meant that you had gold and silver. That was the only thing that people would accept. If you wanted a chicken from somebody, and they had to give up something that was really valuable, they wanted something that they also thought was valuable in exchange. And so the best that you could do back then is offer them something else, like maybe a sweater or some milk from your cow or something. But money, if you wanted to give them money, you had to give them gold and silver. So here we have the Spanish people kind of arriving in the Americas and wondering, oh, is that gold? Is that gold? And they're racing around thinking maybe there's gold to be found here in the Americas. And so, and then the other thing that was especially exciting to them, and we kind of sense it a little bit in this painting that we have seen as well, is that this place, that these places that Columbus found, the Spanish, and we see so many of them in this image, were not particularly interested in. In a way, what I sense in this man's gaze right here is, where's the Chinese emperor? I sense his lack of interest in the naked natives and the island, which is not very interesting to him, because where are the great treasures? Where are the great people of Asia that he has been promised by Columbus? That was the real main reason to go on the voyage. And so since Columbus had not really accomplished that, now there was a great concern that, were we going to get there or not? Who was going to get there first? Because we know that the Portuguese were already succeeding in getting around Africa. And so we're going to come back to this map quite often here that I've created, and I'll put a version of it on the class webpage as well. So what we have by 1492 is that while Christopher Columbus has indeed gone, let's see here if I can use, which tool can I use? I'll use this one. Okay, so Christopher Columbus has gone over here, that's fine and good, but meanwhile, this character called Bartolomeo Diaz right here has gotten down to this point, right? And so actually the dates need to be 87, 88. This is an older map, I need to fix that. But anyway, by getting all the way here, the Portuguese knew that all they had to do now was keep going, and they were going to get to India. They had a sure route. They knew where they were going. Columbus, on the other hand, didn't really know, and the Spanish were worried. So the Age of Discovery really started to become a race between Portugal and Spain, and soon other countries in Europe wanted to join the race as well. They're racing because this isn't good enough as far as the Spanish are concerned. I think this painting is that we have looked at is an ingenious painting in a lot of different ways. One of them is it shows us how much the landing in the Americas meant to Columbus, but strangely, how little that it meant to the Spanish. They didn't really care. They weren't impressed. What they wanted was access to Asia. They wanted to become the middleman of the world. So, the only way they were going to be satisfied was if Christopher Columbus could actually get them to Asia. So the first voyage just wasn't good enough, and the king and queen of Spain said, all right, go again. See if you can get there, because we need to get there before Portugal. If Portugal gets there first, we're going to be in trouble. So here we have a map that I'll also post to the class webpage of the different voyages of Christopher Columbus. Actually, I have a better version than that. I'm going to quickly try to see if I can find it for you guys here. I don't know why that one's not the latest updated version. But the voyages of Christopher Columbus, I made a nicer version of it. Is it this one? Yeah, this one. I've kind of improved the map a little bit on my own. This version of the map shows each of the voyages in the year that they were done. So the first one in blue is 1492. And then the second voyage, pretty soon afterwards, the one in red with the arrows showing him going there, is the second one, and then the ones thereafter. And the stuff where he's coming back, I just put that in dotted lines because it's not really important, right? The important stuff is more the way out, not so much the way back. Not that big of a deal. So in the second voyage, Christopher Columbus goes in red here, and he returns mostly to the places he had been before. So we have this island right here that nowadays we call Santo Domingo. And it has countries like, who knows their world geography? Ooh, does anybody know what the world geography is for this part of the world? Santo Domingo's not a country. There's two countries on that island. Does anybody know what they are? Good research project. Go find out. I think the two countries are Haiti and Dominican Republic. Correct me if I'm wrong. See if you can go find out the answer. But anyway, this was the place where Christopher Columbus had left some of his men. And when he got back here a year later, or however, I'm not sure. When he got back, they were all dead. And so this was obviously something that upset the Spanish very much. There was no way to know what had happened. The natives claimed that the Spanish had been mean to them, and so they'd had to defend themselves. But the truth is, and this is something that we just have to understand about the Spanish, they didn't care. They were not interested in these primitive native peoples. They were not interested in what stories they had to tell about this or that. They had a very, very specific purpose in being there. They wanted to get to Asia. And if the natives couldn't help with that, they better get out of the way. And not cause any trouble. Because we know that these Spanish people who are arriving here were not exactly nice folks. And so we know, for instance, that the people of Spain, among other people in Europe, treated everybody else as enemies. Right? We know that the people of Spain treated the people of Portugal as enemies, the people of France as enemies. Even their own neighbors in Europe, they treated as enemies. And we also know that from the Reconquista, that these Spanish people treated anybody who had a different religion as enemies too. Right? So in the Reconquista, we have the story of the Christians fighting the Muslims. And these are both important things about Spain. And so when the Spanish people got to the Americas and they found these primitive people so different from them, and obviously not Christians, they didn't think that these people were worthy of respect. We might look back on that and feel differently and be upset. But we have to understand that the Spanish did not think that way. And so when they found that the Spanish people that had been left behind were all dead, they did not feel badly at all about doing whatever they wanted to the natives in retaliation and treating them very brutally if they refused to help them, if they didn't want to convert to Christianity, if they didn't help them to find gold. The story definitely becomes one of conquest. So that certainly is a part of what we're going to see. So the Spanish were laying claim. Remember, right? We see back in our painting that when Columbus comes and he finds these primitive people. Oh, I'm so sorry. I have a little unexpected noise here. Just a sec. Okay, sorry. So anyway, when Columbus arrives in the Americas and he finds these primitive people here, he's claiming this place for Spain. Right? This is going to belong to Spain now. They don't really own this as far as Spain is concerned. Spain cannot possibly look at them and say, these are people that we will respect. So they're claiming it. And meanwhile, along those same lines, they're saying, well, we're going to keep on going west here in red. If you look around, Columbus went as far west as kind of the tip of Cuba over here. And really, this was very discouraging for him and the rest of the Spanish. They were not finding Asia, were they? They were not finding Japan or China as promised. So they were getting quite worried that they were going to lose this race of the Age of Discovery. So in 1494, something quite interesting and important for history happened. Spain and Portugal made a bargain. In 1494, Spain and Portugal made a bargain. And it was called the Treaty of Tordesillas. Okay? And I've made a map of this treaty to show you kind of what happened in history and how important it became. And Patrick will understand one part of this especially here. Because the Treaty of Tordesillas said that Portugal would take half of the world. They definitely thought very highly of themselves. Portugal would take half of the world, and Spain would take the other half. This half. Okay? So these are the lines that they drew. Right? And so they gave Spain this half because of what Christopher Columbus had found. And they thought, okay, well, Portugal's going to go over here. They'll get access to India and this kind of stuff. And maybe if we keep going, Christopher Columbus thought, we'll get to Japan. So that will belong to Spain as well. So this is what they thought the world was like. But as it turns out, and we know that Christopher Columbus and all of the explorers had underestimated how big the world is. The world was not this big. The world was this big. And so when they drew the lines, something strange and unexpected happened. The line ended up going here. So notice, Portuguese claim goes here. Right? And the Spanish claim goes here. Now, if we look at a real map of what they were claiming to do, because they had to recalculate time and time again as they were figuring it out, the Portuguese claim stretches out to here. And the Spanish claim only begins here. So who knows what the important effect was on the history of the world because of this mistake? A puzzle to most people now is the languages of South America. What was the strange outcome of this geographical mistake in the Treaty of Tordesillas? Patrick, what's your guess?
Well, my guess is that, well, they may have cut out a little bit of the part that Columbus discovered or some other people.
Well, yeah, but more specifically, you should know because you speak this language. So Jack is going to help you. Jack, go ahead.
Brazil speaks Portuguese while the rest of South America speaks Spanish.
Brazil speaks Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And that was in the Portuguese part. Even though the rest of South America speaks Spanish. Why is that? Now you know. It's because in 1494, Spain and Portugal made a deal. And they said, Portugal gets this half, Spain gets this half. Just because of that deal. In 1494, Portugal took over Brazil. And to this day, the largest, most important country in South America, the people don't speak Spanish. They speak Portuguese. Because of this bargain. Another interesting part of the bargain was that they didn't know yet exactly what part, where everything on this side ended up. Was it on the Spanish side or on the Portuguese side? So we're going to see that that has other results as well in Asia. But for the Americas, the most interesting outcome of the Treaty of Tordesillas was that Portugal would take over Brazil, and that would become a Portuguese-speaking country. All right, so now this is pretty funny in a sense, right? Portugal says, all of this is ours. Any part of this is not Christian is ours. And Spain says, anything over here that's not Christian is ours. Now, that's just two little countries in Europe, right? They're claiming to take over the world. Well, guess what the other kings of Europe said? Basically, give me a break already, right? Who do you think you are? King of Portugal, King of Spain. You think you get to have the whole world and we're just going to sit here and let you take it? No way. No way. So the King of England, very shortly thereafter, sent his own explorer. The English called him John Cabot, and here's his kind of basic voyage. We don't know exactly how far he went to North America. But from England, he was actually Italian also, just like Columbus. His real name was Giovanni Caboto, and the English called him John Cabot. And so, just like Christopher Columbus's real name was Cristoforo Colom, or Colombo, I can't remember exactly which version, Colombo, I think, in Italian, but we call him Christopher Columbus. So, John Cabot went across to here. So now England was starting to claim North America. And pretty soon, the race to take over the world was starting to get pretty exciting. Portugal now was finally successful as they had wanted to be. Here goes Vasco da Gama. He gets over here, and before you know it, Portugal has contact with India. Those of you who studied the history of India with me in the History of Asia course know how that goes. And then, well, the Portuguese navigator Pedro Alvarez Cabral, right here, followed him to India, but he got blown off course over here, and he got to Brazil. And he looked at all his maps and he said, hey, wait a minute, I think this part is on this side of the line. Right? The Treaty of Tordesillas line, where does that line go again? Does it go here? Or does it go here? And Cabral was trying to do calculations and he said, I think this part's on our side. So he said, all right, let's take this too. This is for Portugal and not for Spain. So before you know it, England has joined the race and Portugal has, in a sense, won the race. They were the first to get to Asia. And Christopher Columbus is not succeeding, which is very frustrating. Right? He gets sent back two more times to the Americas. So on the third voyage, we can see here, let me use green for my annotations. On the third voyage, which is the green one here, what's going on? Green. Okay? He's going this way, which is very interesting. He's going much further south because he figures maybe there is a different route. Maybe I'm going to find something else. So what he did on this voyage was he reached South America for the first time. And this was kind of exciting to him in a different way. Because if you go to this part of South America, there's a country called Venezuela. Now, today, of course, right? We call this Venezuela. And what Christopher Columbus found was that there was a huge river here called the Orinoco. And he realized that the only way you could have a river that big was if you had a continent. And so for the first time in his own understanding, Christopher Columbus realized, aha, there's a continent here we didn't know about. So he kept looking. I mean, that was interesting, but not good enough. So time to go on a fourth voyage. If he could convince Ferdinand and Isabella to let him do it, wasn't easy. So he goes on his fourth voyage, and now he's going to try as hard as possible to go all the way to Asia. Unfortunately, you can't. You simply cannot get past America to Asia until modern times. Does anybody know how you can do it today if you wanted to? Which is kind of right here. Does anybody know what special trick modern industrialized human beings have come up with to get to Asia now? Abby probably does. Abby?
Airplane?
No, well, yes, of course, you are absolutely right, but I'm talking about something right here. Caleb knows.
Panama Canal.
Panama Canal, right. So in modern times, about 100 years ago, people cut through all of this earth and they made a canal. So you can take a boat from this side to this side, right through this little skinny part of the continent. But, of course, in Christopher Columbus's time, that did not exist. So he was, in a sense, he finished his days as an explorer pretty frustrated because he had found all this wonderful new stuff, but it wasn't what he wanted to find. It wasn't Asia. And the Spanish also, in general, were pretty frustrated by that. Christopher Columbus started to get into a lot of trouble with the people that were coming with him. He was getting in trouble with King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella because they expected to get to Asia. And if they couldn't, then anybody going to the Americas better find some good stuff there. Otherwise, the king and queen were going to get upset. And so once Columbus and other Spanish explorers discovered that here in Central America, there was a civilization called the Aztec Empire. And over here in South America, another civilization called the Inca Empire. That got them pretty excited. See, today, even to this day, for instance, here's the ruins of a city that was in Mexico. It's called Chichen Itza. And the people of the Aztec Empire were pyramid builders. So they've got pyramids in the middle of the jungle. And it turns out they had a fair amount of gold as well. So the Spanish got pretty excited by that and decided to conquer them and take it. And so we have the story following Columbus's arrival in the Americas. We have the story that's very important to the history of Mexico and the history of Peru and countries like that in South America. It's called The Story of the Conquistadors. Now, it doesn't really have anything to do with American history, so we're not going to pay any special attention to it. But it's important for the people who live in these countries over here, and it's an interesting story. More kind of a story that's worth learning when you're older, because a lot of the things that you're going to learn about the people of Mexico and Peru are pretty troubling, and I'm not even going to mention them in this class, because there were some awful things that people did back in those primitive societies. But anyway, what matters more about Christopher Columbus's voyages and the revelation that you cannot get to Asia going this way, right? It's just not going to work. This does not work. Wrong. Sorry, Christopher Columbus, you had a great idea. The theory of it is really great, but it turns out there's a whole continent here, so you can't do it. What mattered most about this in the Age of Discovery was that finally another explorer sailed for Spain, understanding that you could not simply go west. This explorer's name is Ferdinand Magellan. So, since this was not going to work over here, right, because all of this is in the way, Ferdinand Magellan knew that the Portuguese had gone all the way over here. So he sensed that there was no way. All of this was blocked. He said, there's no way to go here. And he knew that the English were already going here. So it wasn't a good idea to try to go there. So Ferdinand Magellan's idea was, let's see how far south this thing goes. Right? Just like the Portuguese were going around Africa, he figured, I can go around America. So here we have this red line, which I'm highlighting in brown, is the voyage of Ferdinand Magellan. And he slips by South America, and he says, all right, I'm on the other side now. And then, bam, straight across the Pacific Ocean. By far the largest ocean in the world. Right? So it's pretty impressive that Christopher Columbus took about 5 weeks to go all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. It takes something like twice as long, if not longer, for Ferdinand Magellan to go all the way across the Pacific Ocean. This was incredibly difficult. And a lot of the sailors died on the ships just trying to get across the ocean. They didn't have enough food. And when you don't have enough nutrients in your diet, you get all kinds of diseases. And some of you might have heard of scurvy, for instance, which is when you don't get enough vitamin C, if you're not drinking enough orange juice or any of those good fruits and vegetables in your diet, well, awful things start to happen. I don't know if I should give you the gory details or not. So you guys can look it up if you want. And you might end up reading about it in books, too. But terrible, terrible things happened. But Ferdinand Magellan was successful in getting all the way to the Philippines. And unfortunately, he died there. So he got into a conflict with the natives there, and he died. So his helper, Sebastian del Cano, whose name is written here on the map, had to complete the voyage, which he did, and it came back all the way to Spain. And as it says on this map here, I'll take away my annotations now, it took 3 years to do it. It took 3 years to do it. All right, so all of this is going to change the world, right? This is the story of the people who are connecting everybody in the world. South America, North America, Asia, Africa, everybody is now going to be connected along these routes of exploration, which are going to become routes of trade. And in some cases, routes of conquest as well. People are going to become all connected to each other. So we're getting much closer now, thanks to the Age of Discovery, to the world that we live in. But before we are ready to start talking about what people are going to do when they get here to the part that's most interesting and important to us, we're going to have to learn one more story. We're going to have to learn about something that was going on in Europe at the same time, pretty much, as Magellan is going all over is circling the entire planet, at the same time as the Europeans are going out into the world and conquering the Aztecs and starting to trade with India and reaching the Philippines and doing all of this. At the same time, Christianity in Europe is being changed in a very important way. So the people of Europe themselves are going to start to believe in Christianity in many different ways. So we will talk about why this matters and how important this is to the history of the world starting on Monday. All right, so we can talk about the next chapter in our story, which is the Reformation and religious wars. Alrighty. Wow. Alright, we are racing through here, this tidal wave of exploration, and on the other side of it is the world that we live in, this globalized, interconnected, America-centric world. So we're getting closer, closer and closer to understanding where we are now. Okay, folks, that's it for now. Tomorrow, of course, is History Through Art. So thank you very much, and I'll talk to you then. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.